following is a presentation of Refuge Calvary Chapel Huntington Beach with Pastor Bill Welsh. For more information about our ministry, please visit refugefamily.com.
Well, last week we kind of introduced Ecclesiastes by going to Matthew chapter 11, because I didn't want us to plunge into this strange book. Remember I call it the strange book, Solomon's other strange book, along with Song of Solomon? And it is. It's a book that if you don't really read it in one sitting, you're kind of cheating yourself. I was just going to take tonight and read through it, but we wouldn't have time to finish it, even if we just did that tonight. But I really encourage you, if you haven't done it, shall I ask the embarrassing question? How many of you between last week and tonight read the book of Ecclesiastes? Does anybody do it? Oh, good. Give them, Alan, give them a star for their chart, because double star. If you read it in more than one version, we'll give you a double star. But you're really cheating yourself if you read it in snippets, because it's a flow, and it's a beautiful flow. It's a powerful flow. I'll say this probably a couple times. I really believe that this is Solomon giving us, in some degree, his testimony about his search in his life, coming to that place. What is life all about? And coming to that powerful conclusion that if you've read it, you know where it is at the end. But it's Solomon wrestling with these questions. And one of the commentaries that I've been looking at compared it to Job. And here's the contrast, really, between Solomon's dilemma and Job's dilemma. Job tells us exactly why he's in this pit. Everything that he cared about, all of his children are gone. And not that he didn't care about his wife, but all of his possessions. I mean, he has been wrecked by the disaster that God allowed to come upon him. Job stated the reason he wrestled with the same anomalies, the same puzzle of life, a life that had been assaulted by crisis. Solomon doesn't tell us what happened. Whatever it was that got him, something really, maybe it's just a compilation of things, but something got him. When I was hiking early one morning, up around Galilee, I got out real early a couple of mornings, and I walked by myself. I went down to Tiberias, turned around, and I came back. And there's this one place where the trail, and you follow these markings on rocks, these painted dashes on, they call them flares, that are painted different colors so you know what trail you're on. So it directed me to go down off of this path and sort of through a real tight place where I had to walk by this culvert, and it was covered by these, how many of you know what a Palo Verde tree is? Bright, beautiful yellow flowers. What else do they have? Thorns. I mean, just really lethal thorns. And it's not just a point, it's got a hook on it. And as I was coming back through there, it got a hold of my shirt and it said, whoa, and it stops you in your tracks. It was sort of one of those not so fast or come back here type trees. And that's what a crisis is like in life, where it obviously gets your attention. And it makes you stop, and you don't just charge through it and say, oh, well. And whatever it was for Solomon, he has this similar sort of philosophical moment in his life where he's wondering, what is this all about? Why did this happen? How many of you have had one or two of those moments, maybe even recently? How many of you, if the person beside you is sleeping, would you nudge them gently or not so gently? How many of you have ever had, again, one of those moments in life where you said, why is this happening? I wonder how many of us have ever said, what did I do wrong? Or maybe a preacher told you, well, there must be sin in your life if you can't pay your bills. Oh, throw that stuff in the shredder. But there are those moments where it just gets you and you just have to stop. I think it's interesting, one of the contrasts between Job and Solomon as he wrestles with these big questions, there's no point, counterpoint with anybody. There's no friends on the sideline trying to advise him. And God doesn't speak to him either, at least not on record here. And God doesn't speak from heaven and say, well, let me clear all this up for you. I love that in Job where God says to him, okay, buddy, you're going to sit down, you're going to listen, I'm going to speak. Solomon just takes 12 chapters and he lays it all out there. Maybe he's debating with himself in a sense, or showing us how he processed all of these puzzles of life. I want you to hold your place there in Ecclesiastes, back up to Psalm 39, and listen to this. This is great. Psalm 39 was written by his father, by Solomon's father David. And he says this in, I'm going to read from 1 down to verse 3. I said, I will guard my ways, lest I sin with my tongue. I will restrain my mouth with a muzzle. How many of you wish you'd have done that once or twice, more often than you did? I will restrain my mouth with a muzzle while the wicked are before me. I was mute with silence, held my peace, even from good, and my sorrow was stirred up. Listen to this. My heart was hot within me while I was musing. The fire burned, and then I spoke with my tongue. He says, here was the process. David, anyway. Maybe this is the same for his son, for his boy, Solomon. He said, I mused, I thought deeply, meditated, pondered deeply, and my heart went to burning, and then I spoke. And maybe that's what the process was and the progress was of what became Ecclesiastes. And I think it's very commendable that this man, when he went through whatever this crisis was or this compounding, you know, series of crises, he did not lose his faith. He didn't really reach up and blame God. He continued to cling to God, and he processes it really like a philosopher. Now, I'm going to ask, we're going to have a little quiz here, okay? If you've ever read Ecclesiastes, you might have noticed that there are some phrases in Ecclesiastes that repeat themselves. What are those phrases in Ecclesiastes that just keep coming up over and over and over again? Give me one. Vanity, vanity. All is vanity. It shows up about 33 times if I counted right. What's another one? What's that? Vexation. I didn't catch that one over and over again, but that is in there. Grasping for the wind. That's all kind of with vanity. Another one that comes up is this one. What's the big deal of working so hard? What's the profit from working hard? And we'll get into that when we get to that part, where he really develops why this has him so worked up. What's the profit from working so hard? Give me another one. It's one of these phrases that speaks about his position, where he is. And he says it over and over, almost as many times as he says, vanity, vanity, all is vanity. That comes up later. And I think there's only one time that's in there. Under the sun. Under the sun. See, what Solomon is talking about is life right here. He only has one, maybe two, but one for sure where he says something about where the believer is going. So much of his focus was this life. I think that would be logical because he's a king, and it's his responsibility to keep order and peace and hopefully move a nation towards prosperity. So all of this building that he does that we'll read about, it's life here under the sun. There's other phrases that he uses, under heaven or here on earth, and there's one or two other phrases, but it all says the same thing. He's worked up, he's troubled about what happens here on earth. And maybe that's one of the reasons he allowed himself to get so much under this idea that everything here is worthless. Because on your way through here, you've got to keep your eyes on heaven. Amen? You got to remember, this is not all there is. This is a lot. This is important here, but this is not all there is. Give me another one. Under the sun, vanity, vanity, all is vanity. What does it profit a man? There's this other one, and it's one of the main focuses all the way through. We're dealing with it this week right now, today. Tomorrow, what's that? The fool and the wise. There's a comparison with the fool and the wise, yeah, all the way through. Sorrow from what? Death. He says this, the same event happens to all of us, poor, rich, wise, stupid, although he says fool, animals, people, he says death, and it just, he's always staring death in the face. I was talking to Steve today about tomorrow's memorial service, and I just made the mention that I spent a lot of time in cemeteries, probably more than most people in the room do, because I'm asked to officiate at funerals. And I usually, and I've mentioned this before, probably because of my mama. She loved to go to cemeteries, and she was not a preacher. She just loved to visit, especially old cemeteries. And maybe she kind of worked this into me somehow, but I'll walk around and I'll do the math and I'll read date of birth, date of death. And it just, oh, you can't take more than probably 10 steps in a cemetery without stopping and saying, oh, wow, so young. And Solomon just sees that. He said the same event, we're all heading for the same event. There's one more, actually two more. Wisdom comes up over and over again. Well, what's his one of his conclusions to you and I about the result of our work here? What's the point? We've got that eat, drink, and be merry. Now, he's not saying party your life away. And I'll develop that more when we get to it. But he's saying, you know, enjoy what God has blessed you with. He's not saying get ripped every night and throw a party every night. But he's saying, you know, enjoy the life that God has given you. And then there's this last one. Fear God and do what's right. Now, he works these themes through his testimony, is what I'm going to call it. He works it through there, and he will not let go of these. I mean, it really is like a wise preacher. At the end of the book of Ecclesiastes, I think it's in chapter 12, and it's somewhere in the middle of that chapter. He talks about the preacher whose words are like nails. He said, the good preacher nails it down. How many times you got to hit a nail to drive it? Well, I know. There's some of your carpenters, and you can do it in one perfectly aimed swing, can't you, Jeff? Yeah, you're smiling there, can't you? The rest of us are mere mortals. We can't do what you can do. But you got to hit it. You got to drive it in. And he does that. He nails these themes over and over again to remind us about what matters. This man is full of wisdom. And you know why he's full of wisdom? Somebody, he asked for it. He asked for it. And again, I know it seems like we're taking a long time to introduce this, but it's worth it. Turn back to 2 Chronicles chapter 1. You know what happened at the end of 1 Chronicles? David passed away. Beginning of 2 Chronicles, it's Solomon's turn. And there's an appropriate transition. First thing here on record that Solomon does, I would say the first significant thing that he does, is he comes to the tabernacle and he makes a massive offering. Look at verse 6. Solomon went up there to the bronze altar before the Lord, which was at the tabernacle of meeting, and offered 1,000 burnt offerings. Well, he could afford it. He had tons of animals. But he went over the top. This is so much more than he was required to give. And he offers 1,000 offerings. And on that night, God appeared to Solomon and said to him, ask, what shall I give you? How would you answer that question? If God just put a blank check in front of you and said, what would you like? I'd like to pay off my house. Maybe buy another house. Maybe buy a Winnebago. I don't know what you'd ask for if God said, what would you like? But listen to Solomon. Solomon said to God, you have shown great mercy to David, my father, and have made me king in his place. Now, O Lord, let your promise to David, my father, be established. For you have made me king over a people like the dust of the earth in multitude. In other words, there's a lot of us. Now give me wisdom and knowledge that I may go out and come in before this people. For who can judge this great people of yours? Then God said to Solomon, because this was in your heart, and you have not asked riches or wealth or honor or the life of your enemies, nor have you asked long life, but you've asked wisdom and knowledge for yourself, that you may judge my people over whom I have made you king. Wisdom and knowledge are granted to you, and I will give you riches and wealth and honor, such as none of the kings have had who were before you, nor shall any after you have the like. Does that bring to mind any passage, anybody? Ephesians, where Paul says, God is able to do exceeding abundantly above all that you ask or think. And here's a man that asks for something not really for himself, but the wisdom to rule and the knowledge to rule and to keep the people on a steady, straight path. And God says, I'm going to give you that. I'm going to give you what you didn't ask for. I am going to make you rich. Now, Solomon was blessed. It says, you can read on in his story, but Solomon was blessed and blessed the people that he ruled with peace and with prosperity. And he made some very foolish mistakes for the wisest man that ever lived. He made some terrible mistakes, both in his marriages, multiple marriages, and in the building of altars that he had no business building for pagan deities. And he brought some ruin because of that. Introduced something he never, ever should have introduced. But God said, I will give you wisdom. And that wisdom, well, it became a little bit of a weight, more than a little bit of a weight. It became a very, very heavy weight for him. So I want to start in verse 1. And we may not get any further tonight than chapter 1. We may get to chapter 2, but we'll see. And what we're going to do over the coming 6 weeks, including tonight, is take a couple of chapters a night. If I don't get through, we'll find a way to make up for that. But we're going to spend tonight and the next 5 weeks that we're together, aside from when Paul I is with us, to really just look and dwell and think through this. Watch this man's testimony develop. He says this, the words of the preacher, that's Solomon, the son of David, king in Jerusalem, vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? One generation passes away, and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. How many of you have ever had a moment like that? A moment of awareness where you, even when we were walking in Israel, you know, you're walking among a place where it's ancient history. You look at some of these ruins that, you know, some of them are in different degrees of repair and rebuilding, and you just think, wow, that was there so much longer than me. And then you're walking down that hill, or like, you know, Dan said, running down the hill, about to stumble on some of these rocks, and you realize, bam, that rock I just kicked, that's older, that's as old as dirt. I mean, that's older than anybody could imagine. You look at these mountains, you look at the plateau of Masada, just waiting for somebody to build a fortress up there. And you have that same sensation that Solomon did. It's like, wow, I'm here for a few short years and then I'm gone and the earth remains. Now listen to how he compares this. He's going to, in the next few verses, he's going to compare all of this movement, all of this natural movement, to his brief movement in these few trips around the sun that we take. But in verse 5, he says, the sun rises and then it goes down. And then it hastens to the place where it rose again. The sun just keeps moving. It just keeps making this track. Rises down, rises down. The wind, he says, it goes toward the south and then turns around to the north. And the wind whirls about continually and comes again on its circuit. So a lot of people that have said an awful lot about the insight, really even the scientific impact of what Solomon said about the path of the sun and about the path of the wind and how accurate it was before he knew anything about that. It was just observation and inspiration from God. But he said, I see the sun rising and setting. I see the wind coming from the north and going to the south, and then it swirls back around, obviously, and comes back upon us again. Verse 7, and the rivers, the motion of the water, all the rivers run down to the sea. They trickle off of the mountains of Israel. They came down from Mount Hermon. They came down from all those surrounding mountains. The streams became rivers that filled up the Galilee and ran out of the Galilee and then down into the Dead Sea. But he said these rivers run into the sea, which would have been the Mediterranean, and yet the sea is not full. To the place from which the rivers come, there they return again. How did he know that? That the rivers would run down into the, or the streams would come down in the rivers into the sea, evaporation would carry it back and deposit it again, and it'd come right out of the mountains again. But he says, I see all this circular motion, and they return there again, right to where they started. Verse 8, all things are full of labor, and man cannot express it. Well, because he doesn't understand it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. And he says, that which has been is what will be, and that which is done is what will be done, and there's nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which it may be said, see, this is new? Well, he hadn't seen the iPhone, had he? No, but he'd seen the same passions of man. He saw man doing the same thing, making the same mistakes over and over again, the quest for power, the quest for riches. It has never changed. The lust that drives us, and he knew that in his own life, in his own testimony. He said, there really is nothing new under the sun. There was new technology coming all the time. It wasn't that he was this Neanderthal that didn't understand that there's progress technologically. No, he even was the sort of the brainchild for some of that technology. But he said, really, there's nothing at the core that's new. Because people do the same thing over and over again. Nothing new under the sun. Who can really say, look, this is new? He said, it's already been in ancient times before us. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come by those who will come after. Oh, that had to absolutely be painful for this man who was an amazing builder to look at all that he would make and realize one day, Dan and Steve and Dave and Bill and many of you are going to walk over a pile of rocks without even realizing this was one of David's great works. It would all just become rubble again. It would all be blown away or washed away or quaked away. And it was gone. Sometimes just as quickly as the idea had popped up into his head. In verse 12, he says, I, the preacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem, and I set my heart to seek and to search out wisdom concerning all that is done here on earth under heaven. This burdensome task God has given to the sons of men by which they may be exercised. Well, God gave him the burdensome task because he asked for it. I want to be wise. And with what he understood, the wisdom became a weight. It weighted him down. Verse 14, I've seen all the works that are done under the sun. And indeed, again, all is vanity. Grasping for the wind. Isn't that a powerful image? Trying to get a hold of the wind with your hands. Slips right through your fingers. Solomon is saying, everything I've really reached for is substance. It's so easily lost. He says, what is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be numbered. I commune with my heart, saying, look, I have attained greatness, and I've gained more wisdom than all who were before me in Jerusalem. My heart has understood great wisdom and knowledge, and I set my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is grasping for the wind. He says, I set my wisdom to do this. What makes some men wise and some men foolish? Well, like a social scientist or like a psychologist, like a philosopher, I wanted to understand what's the difference between wisdom and folly, and why do some people choose the senseless path of just foolish living? And he said, it was too much for me. I set my heart to know madness, wisdom, and folly to discern the difference. I perceive that it's like grasping for the wind. I remember when our daughter Starlin was trying to make up her mind what she wanted to study at college. And she was thinking about psychology. And we had a great conversation about that. And I said, well, that's a worthy study. It's a worthy pursuit. I said, as long as you understand this, that if you choose to study psychology, you're choosing to study something that the scripture says you'll never understand. Who can know the mind of man? Not man. And we do our best to help people untangle some of those mental and emotional, intellectual knots, but and to get through those tough times in life. But I said, I'm not saying don't do it, but if you choose to do that, you're pursuing something that you're guaranteed you'll never really completely understand. And so she chose journalism instead. But in much wisdom, look at verse 18. Read it out loud with me if you would, please. For in much wisdom is much grief, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. He's saying, oh, I think I know too much. I think I feel like I know too much insight that I have, and it burdened him. And maybe there's some insight there into what brings Solomon to this place where he just sounds depressed to me, doesn't he, to you? Now, he is writing a book where he's discussing what he went through before he sort of came out into at least a good amount of light at the end of it. But I can understand how a man who set his heart to do what he did is just going to come out the other side, worked, and even maybe he wrestled with depression. There's great, great people that wrestle with depression because they look at a world they can't nail down. They look at relationships that they can't fix. You know, if people were like puzzles, it'd be so much easier. You just put the pieces together, and then you take, what is that stuff you puzzle people do? You just spray over it to keep it together, you know? Put the glue over it and keep it together. But people aren't like puzzles. People are a puzzle. With how many pieces of you are missing? I don't know how many pieces of me are missing, but in Solomon, it says, it was just, this wisdom was grief to me. And the increased knowledge, it became sorrow to me. He said, it wore me out. This man is searching. This man is searching for answers, and he's not just searching for answers for himself. He's searching for answers for the people that he cares about. And he says, there's nothing new under the sun. I see it happen over and over and over and over again. You know, and if he talks about, remember when he asked God for the wisdom, he says, I want, when the people come in and they ask me for wisdom, I want to be like a good king, that almost like a counselor king that can sit down and help them iron these things out. And I wonder how many times it was like listening to, by the way, how many of you listen to Pastor's Perspective? Anybody here listen to Pastor's Perspective? Have you ever heard the same question twice? I mean, it's over and over again. I wonder how many times Solomon thought, well, let's put this one on a DVD and we can send it home with them and we will record these answers so the next 10 people that come with it, they've got the same answer and it doesn't wear me out to have to say the same thing over and over again. He saw them coming with the same exact questions over and over and over again, trying to help them understand how to get by here with life under the sun. Then verse 1, chapter 2. He says, I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with mirth, happiness, frivolity. I'll test you with mirth. Therefore, enjoy pleasure. But surely this was also vanity. I said of laughter, madness, and of mirth, what does it accomplish? I searched in my heart how to gratify my flesh with wine while guiding my heart with wisdom. Now that's a balancing act, isn't it? I'm gonna get drunk and still try to be smart, he says. With a bottle of wine in one hand and Proverbs just coming out of the mouth, he said, I searched my heart how to gratify my flesh with wine while guiding my heart with wisdom and how to lay hold on folly till I might see what was good for the sons of men to do under heaven all the days of their life. And I made my works great. I built myself houses. I planted myself vineyards. I made myself gardens and orchards, and I planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made myself water pools from which to water the growing trees of the grove. You can still see some of these works of Solomon. You can see one of these massive pools, reservoirs, south of Bethlehem, which is south of Jerusalem, which is in the West Bank, and not a lot of people want to go into the West Bank to see these things. Massive reservoir, still the residue of it, is there today. And some scholars believe that he made this huge reservoir or pool for his many wives to bathe. Whatever, for whatever reason he did it, I said, I built so many things, houses and vineyards and planted farms and walls, built walls around the city. I built and I built and I built. I made my works great, water pools from which to water the growing trees of the garden. Then I acquired male and female servants and had servants born in my house. Yes, I had greater possessions of herds and flocks than all who were in Jerusalem before me. He was a collector. How many of you are collectors? Anybody here but me a collector? I collect stuff I shouldn't collect. Now, not bad stuff, just too much stuff. And I can't tell you how many times I look at that and I say, I know my kids will throw that away when I'm dead. So why am I holding on to it? There's no way in the world they're going to go through all my newspaper clippings that I could mount up to the ceiling that, oh, I'll use that in a message someday. And other stuff. Joy and I have, you know, a little bit of different sort of supplements that we take, but I take some protein powder and I have some of this stuff called Green Vibrance and I mix it up. And they come in these really cool plastic jugs, you know? You can't throw that away. That's good for something. All 25 of them that are in my garage are going to be good for something. And I can see myself making places for nuts and bolts and all that, which I've never done and I'll never do. But it was more significant things that he collected. What did he collect? Collected people. Collected slaves. He said, I collected so many slaves. Slaves started having slaves, and then more slaves were born. Servants were born in my household. He collected wives. A thousand of them, and then other just sex partners that he had. When he talks about a man that has 100 children, he might have had 100 children or more, obviously. But he collected everything. And he said, what was that all about? I gathered for myself, verse 8, collected gold and silver. I gathered for myself silver and gold and the special treasures of kings. The special treasures of kings, maybe they were the kind of gifts that other kings and dignitaries had visited, they brought to him. Special spices and special oils and things from all over that part of the world. He said, I collected all of this stuff, kings and from the provinces who brought to him. I acquired male and female singers. He had choirs and delights of the sons of men and musical instruments of all kinds, which some of them his father had made because David was quite the musician. He said, I collected all of these things, so I became great and excelled more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. And also my wisdom remained with me. Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my reward from all my labor. And then I looked on all the works that my hands had done, and on the labor in which I had toiled, and indeed, what's it say? All was vanity and grasping after the wind. Remember what he said in chapter 1? The eye's never satisfied. The ear's never satisfied. He didn't hear a beautiful piece of music and say, that's all I ever need to hear. It was, oh, go write me some more music. Built a beautiful building, and he'd look at it for a week and a half and think, I'm bored. I got to build another one. I got to dig another pool. And does this sound familiar to anybody here? That I got to have more. It's just more. Just more, just a little bit more, and never, ever do you arrive at that place of deep satisfaction. He said, all these beautiful things, by the way, they're all the things that you and I would love to have. Now, without the slaves, and without the, you know, I don't want 1,000 wives. I got the perfect one. I got one, the perfect one. And I don't need all of that, all the illicit stuff that he had. But all the stuff that came from just having all the silver and the gold, every trinket, anything he saw, oh, I'll have a dozen of those. He'd buy it right off the shelf, right off the rack, didn't ask for a discount. He could afford it and just collected it, put it on the shelf with all of his other collections. No profit. There was no profit under the sun. He said, I wasn't really any more fool. Then I turned myself to consider wisdom and madness and folly. I think he's back on this philosophical track again. For what can man do who succeeds the king? Only what he's already done. And then I saw that wisdom excels folly, finally, as light excels darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. Yet I myself perceived, and here he hits it, we're all going to die. The same event happens to them all. Do you ever think about death that way? Event. It's the big event. And we've all got that big event. There's a bigger event, and that's life that happens in Christ. But we're all moving towards that big event at the same pace, this quickly, that fast. We're all heading towards it. Some of us have less time between now and the big event. But he said, I looked at all of this, and then I realized we're all heading for the same event. So I said in my heart, as it happens to the fool, it happens to me. And why was I then more wise than I said to my heart? This is also vanity, for there is no more remembrance of the wise than of the fool forever, since all that now is will be forgotten in the days to come. And how does a wise man die? Same way a fool dies. His breath runs out, his heart stops, and it's over. Now there may be some people, like Solomon, he's been remembered. And the memory of fools, it does pass quicker. But in these dark moments of reflection, he says, we're all headed for the same thing. I might have a more beautiful grave It may not just be a hole in the ground that they mound over me. I may have a massive tomb, but still I'm gone. What did it matter? Therefore, I hated life because the work that was done under the sun was distressing to me, for all is vanity and grasping after the wind. And then I hated all my labor in which I had toiled under the sun, because I must leave it to the man who will come after me. You know who that is, right? My boy, he said, I don't know that my boy will appreciate what I've done. I've got to leave it to someone. And who knows, verse 19, who knows whether he will be a wise, he'll be wise or a fool. What's the verdict? His son was a fool. And we're not going to go deep into his story, but his son, when Solomon is gone, you know, his counselors came to him as the people came and said, look, can you lighten up the tax load a little bit? We're coming to an election. I don't know if there's much relief on the horizon either way we go, but they came to his son, said, come on, take it easy on him. And he went to his young counselors. He rejected the old wise counselors. So all of his young buddies said, well, if you back off on them now, they'll walk all over you. He said, you go back and you tell them you ain't seen nothing yet. And what did he do? What did he do? What happened to the United Nation of Israel? He divided it in half. He said he was right. Who knows? Well, guess what, Solomon? We know now your son was foolish. Who knows whether he'll be wise or a fool, yet he will rule over all my labor in which I toiled and in which I have shown myself wise under the sun. This is vanity. Therefore, I turned my heart and despaired of all the labor in which I toiled under the sun. For there is a man whose labor is with wisdom and knowledge and skill, yet he must leave his heritage to a man who has not labored for it. And there's the danger. You don't appreciate what you didn't put your own hands to. This also is vanity and a great evil. For what has man for all his labor and for the striving of his heart with which he has toiled under the sun? All his days are sorrowful and his work burdensome. And even in the night, his heart takes no rest. Why? Why even at night when Solomon laid his head down on the pillow, why does he say, I didn't even get any rest? What is it that keeps you awake at night sometimes? Worry, anxiety. He's hearing his son down the hallway partying with his buddies, and he's thinking, oy vey, oh, he's the king to come. We got trouble in Jerusalem. He says, I couldn't even get any rest as I thought about what was coming my way. And then he says this vanity, verse 24, nothing's better for a man than that he should eat and drink and that his soul should enjoy good, the good in his labor. This also I saw was from the hand of God. You see the context of that? What should I do in this life? Well, part of it, not all of it, but part of it is enjoy the fruit of your labor. Sit down and have a meal with your family and enjoy the beverage that's on the table. Enjoy the food that's on the table. Enjoy the kids playing around the table. After dinner, go out in the yard and watch the kids play and grab the guitar and sing a few songs and enjoy each other's company and turn off the digital devices and look each other in the face, the eyes, and take a walk somewhere and get heart to heart with each other. He said, enjoy this. This is a gift from God. For who can eat? Verse 25, for who can eat or who can have enjoyment more than I? He says, who knows more about pleasure than I do? The wise, foolish king. For God gives wisdom and knowledge and joy to a man who is good in his sight. But to the sinner, he gives the work of gathering and collecting that he may give to him who is good before God. This also is vanity and a grasping after the wind. Solomon spent his life building here. And as I said, you see the remains of some of his projects. Most of them are gone. And some of them, they're a guess on whether or not they're Solomon's. But Solomon wrote a very interesting psalm, two of them, in the book of Psalms, 72 and 127. And in 127, you'll remember this one. Anybody know how it starts? Give you an extra star on your chart. He says, unless the Lord builds a house, they labor in vain who build. Unless the watchman watch the city, you stay awake in vain. The builder, Solomon said that. Unless the Lord is building, we're wasting our time. If it's just this passion, this chronic, I got to do more, I got to build more, I'm bored. He'll get to the way to get over the boredom. We'll get there. Don't give up. Okay, remember you've got Matthew chapter 11, verse 28. You can rest on that. If you get burdens, you bring your burdens to Jesus. You come to him if you labor and you're heavy laden, and he'll give you rest. See, Solomon could have slept easy if he just looked up to the God who loved him, the God who had promised great things to him, if his gladness had been in the Lord. Unless the Lord builds, we waste our time. Let's learn to rest in him, and let's learn to follow him. It had to be such a humbling thing for him to watch and realize that in his brief life, he would build things that other people would just not appreciate, and they would be gone. I'm so thankful, though, that he recorded this progress of his testimony, how he worked through what doesn't matter to get to what was better and what does matter. Amen? Okay, now you need to go home and read the rest of it, okay, to cheer yourself up, because it does get good at the end.
This has been a presentation of Refuge Calvary Chapel Huntington Beach with Pastor Bill Welsh. For more information about our ministry, please visit refugefamily.com or call 714-891-9495.